welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Brian Venois. In this week's recap, the federal government increased the cost of H-1B visas, which schools often use to hire teachers.
With a pinstroke, we possibly have ruined the future of education for Alaska students.
That's coming up.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
But first, early voting for both the City of Kodiak and the Kodiak Island Borough began on September 22nd. Eligible voters can pick their top two candidates out of the five running for the Borough Assembly this year. Current Assembly members Jared Griffin and Larry Ledoux are not running for their seats, leaving the 2 3-year terms up for grabs. Candidates for the position includes Jeremiah Gardner, Rob Lindsay, Caroline Roberts, Christina Van Hoogmode, and Jeffrey Woods. Griffin is instead running for Borough Mayor, challenging incumbent Scott Arndt. KMXT, KVOK, and the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce partnered for a candidate forums leading up to the October 7th election. Candidates are given time for opening statements before answering a series of questions, as well as issuing closing statements. The forum for the Borough Assembly and Mayor are already online on KMXT.org and on the Kodiak Island Borough's YouTube page. The candidate forum for the City of Kodiak Council and Mayor is on September 29th. Mark Anderson, Terry Haynes, J. Allen Seal, and Mary Jean Silva are all running for City Mayor. Jay Chelly, Juna Davidson, Nick Mangini, and Sandra West are all running for City Council. Early voting is open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. every weekday in the Borough Assembly Chambers all the way through October 6th. Election Day is October 7th. More information about voting in this year's municipal election is available at kodiakak.us. As a quick disclaimer, Christina Van Hoogmode, Jared Griffin, and Terry Haynes are all members of KMXT staff, however do not have editorial influence over the newsroom and did not see the script before broadcast. Another seat on the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly is also open this month after Assembly member Ryan Sherritt submitted his resignation more than a year before his term is set to expire. The Assembly is accepting nominations to fill the vacancy after Sherritt said in a brief letter to the borough that he was resigning due to, quote, personal family reasons. During the Borough Assembly's regular meeting on September 18th, the remaining five Assembly members voted to declare Sherritt's seat vacant. Assembly members like Beau Whiteside spoke about Sherritt's impact on them.
Ryan, he did more research and put more effort into every meeting and agenda item than I think most of us combined. He did it pro bono. He always donated his stipend. Just a true, generous leader in our community. I learned a lot from him.
Assembly members Jared Griffin, Dave Johnson, and Larry Ledoux shared similar sentiments about Sherritt during the meeting. He was not present for that meeting. His final meeting was at a work session on August 28th. The Kodiak Island Borough has 30 days from when Sherritt's seat was declared vacant to appoint a new member. Borough Clerk Nova Javier told Assembly members that the application process has already begun.
On October 9th, tentatively, we have scheduled to conduct interviews with applicants. On October 16, the Assembly may finalize appointment and administer the oath.
Interested applicants who are qualified voters of the Kodiak Island Borough and have been a resident for at least 1 year at the time of filing can submit applications online or in person through October 4. The Assembly must appoint the final candidate to serve for the remainder of Sherritt's term by October 18th. And a hydroponic farmer on the island community of Yuzinki, with a population of roughly 110 people, grows and gives away produce to residents year-round. School children tend a second, smaller hydroponic operation of their own, and the city government now owns dozens of hens to provide eggs. It's a growing level of local food security in a state that imports about 95% of its food from the lower 48. KMXT's Davis Hovey recently toured Yuzinki's farming operation and has this report.
You just break it open and there's kind of slimy on the inside.
Duke Delgado is currently the sole farmer for Spruce Island Farms in Yuzinki and oversees the local hydroponics operation with over 100 little plants. Delgado says he's always thinking of some new plant or farming tool he can experiment with.
And in that cabinet, I could get a head of lettuce from seed to harvest in like 8 weeks. And that's what I like about the hydroponics, is they're quick. And, you know, some grow quicker than others.
For example, bok choy. Delgado has also tried squash, zucchinis, cucumbers, garlic, celery, broccoli, cauliflower, and strawberries. He's had success growing lettuce, bell peppers, and tomatoes, jalapenos, herbs, garlic, even coffee beans.
All these came from Hawaii. My last order that I got from Hawaii, they came infested. And I tried to spray them with that insecticide soap. Well, they told me I couldn't grow coffee here, so I had to prove them wrong.
Delgado is not the only one using hydroponics to grow in Yuzinki. At the local school, a small hydroponics project took root last year. Head teacher Estella Bryan says the school's dozen students have been tending to a few tiny vegetable plants indoors year-round.
Pass them around.
The main ones grow out of one-gallon buckets, three buckets and in a bigger round container that looks like a kiddie pool. But the plants aren't grown in soil. The buckets are filled with clay pebbles.
The main role of it is to keep the plants in place, okay? Because they wick the moisture with their roots, so it doesn't have to stay moist. You can use many other things. These are easy to work with. You just have to wash them off first because they're dusty.
Aside from the hydroponics in Yuzinki, Spruce Island Farms also grows root vegetables like potatoes outdoors in soil. It also has pens for raising chickens. The city of Yuzinki purchased 60 laying hens earlier this year to provide a local source of eggs for the roughly 110 residents. Delgado is able to give away what he produces to locals thanks to a U.S. Department of Agriculture program that reimburses him and farmers in five other communities around Kodiak Island for their produce. In Yuzinki, it has mostly just been him working with the city and the Kodiak Archipelago Leadership Institute, or CALI, on all these agriculture projects for the past 4 years. Max Lyons, who bolsters sustainable food systems around the archipelago with the Institute, says the federal program helps stabilize hydroponic farms like Delgado's.
It's just been a great way to help provide that framework for the farms to grow and expand and get into expanding their markets. And that all comes down to, you know, the farms just benefiting the access of local fresh produce in the communities, and very difficult to get, you know, even just in the town of Kodiak, let alone the villages.
And Lyons says that the Yuzinki farm is working on a way to produce its own hydroponics nutrients and fertilizer using kelp from a future local kelp farm. But after cuts to that federal USDA program earlier this year, the funds coming to Delgado and other Kodiak Archipelago farms are sunsetting at the end of 2026. Delgado says without that money coming from the federal government...
That means I'm going to have to start charging the actual residents. Themselves, other than me get reimbursed from, you know, the government.
And those USDA program cuts will affect more than just Yuzinki's operation. The communities of Port Lyons, Larson Bay, Old Harbor, and Kodiak also have hydroponic or local farm operations that are growing produce for island residents as part of the archipelago-wide farming collective called Aleutic Grown. According to USDA, before the program funding was cut, the state of Alaska was awarded nearly $1.5 million through the Local Food Purchase Cooperative Agreement program. That does not include the $13.7 million awarded to tribal governments in Alaska. Reporting in Yuzinki, I'm Davis Hovey.
In our last story for the week, President Donald Trump announced plans to increase the cost of some types of work visas earlier this month. It's the latest move to tighten national immigration policy and encourage domestic hiring. But KMXT has this report. It could have major consequences for Alaska's schools and businesses. In an executive order, President Donald Trump announced he would up the price of H-1B work visas, which used to cost about $5,000. Those visas will now cost $100,000 per person per year, according to the new executive order. H-1B visas are generally used to fill high-skilled jobs like nurses and allow for longer careers in the U.S. by providing a path to permanent residency like a green card. In recent years, H-1B visas have become increasingly popular for Alaska schools to hire teachers from abroad, too. But there's a concern that many Alaska school districts can't afford the price hike.
With a pinstroke, we possibly have ruined the future of education for Alaska students.
Cindy Mecca is the Kodiak Island Borough School District's superintendent. She says she texted that to another superintendent in Alaska after she heard the news this weekend.
I can't imagine what our classes would look like without those international teachers filling the need.
There are over 30 teachers in Kodiak School District who were hired abroad, many of whom currently hold H-1B visas. And earlier this year, Mika organized a recruiting trip to the Philippines with administrators representing the Nome, Bering Strait, and Kenai Peninsula school districts, too. Districts across the state have faced shortages for teaching staff and struggled to fill positions with domestic hires, including from the lower 48. For some, international hiring efforts are a sort of stopgap measure to ensure classrooms and kids' needs are met. Much of the justification outlined in Trump's executive order, however, targets large information technology firms. But immigration lawyers, like Anchorage attorney Margaret Stock, say multiple industries, like Alaska's public education system, are collateral damage.
Been complete chaos since last Friday.
Stock says Alaska's university system, healthcare, accounting and financial service, and tourism sectors all use H-1B visas too. And Trump and his team haven't had consistent messaging about how they might be affected.
It's hard to figure out what to do when the president issues a proclamation that is then contradicted by everybody who works for the president. It's just hard to advise clients.
She says she's seen the White House and various federal agencies issue conflicting statements surrounding the new H-1B fees. A staffer with Senator Dan Sullivan's office said via email on Tuesday that previously approved visa applications won't be subject to the new fees. Mika says she's heard something similar from the school district's legal team. But Stock says it's unclear what final decisions will be made.
And they seem to be motivated mainly by collecting a lot of money from people. But they didn't even roll out a way for people to pay this $100,000 per person fee.
Mika says she's already working with Alaska's congressional delegation to find some kind of solution for Kodiak and other school districts. Representative Nick Begich, who was in Bethel this week, says he's already brought up how important internationally hired teachers are with the Trump administration.
I do support the ability to bring in J-1s and H-1Bs to support as a supplement to local Alaskans and Americans generally. The education workforce in rural Alaska. We know that it's a hard job to fill. And when you've got positions that go unfilled, it means that kids are going uneducated.
Staffers for Senators Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski both said via email and text on Tuesday that there's a lack of clarity and want schools to have the resources they need. For now, the consensus is that everyone's waiting for more details from the White House. With reporting help from Sage Smiley in Bethel, in Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center is committed to offering safe shelter and resources to victims and their children fleeing domestic violence and/or sexual assault, including the use of a 24-hour crisis line. KWRCC is open to individuals of any gender who need anonymous support from a trained advocate. The crisis line is available at 907-486-3625.
And if you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. That's it for this edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm your host, Brian Benoit. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.